crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. I'm coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel. I want to talk to you today about a pressing issue. And this came to light because of revelations that were unearthed this past couple of days relating to Iran's entrenchment in Syria and also what they're doing with Hezbollah right now to prepare for the next conflict against Israel. And so to set this up, I'm going to go to just a little video clip from Fox News. They had the exclusive on this story, and then we'll go from there.
Western intelligence sources believe Iran has been increasing its shipments of advanced weaponry to Hezbollah, deliveries which now include GPS components to make previously unguided rockets into precision-guided missiles, increasing the threat to Israel. One of the Iranian flights arrived in Lebanon 3 days ago, officials tell Fox News. Iran's Fars Air Keshem, flight number QFZ-9950, departed Tehran International Airport on Tuesday. Later in the day, the Boeing 747 jet touched down in Syria's capital, Damascus, before continuing on to Beirut. On Wednesday, the Iranian cargo plane departed Beirut for Doha, Qatar, and returned to Iran's capital Thursday evening. Just last month at the UN General Assembly, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu shared photos of what he said were three Hezbollah secret sites near Beirut's international airport, locations where he alleges the GPS components were being assembled.
So that was a report from Brett Baer's program on Friday, and it's detailing what happened a week earlier, and this is from U.S. intelligence agencies just looking at this plane. This is a 747 cargo plane, quite large, traveling from Tehran through into Syria, Damascus, and then on to Beirut, and there unloaded some type of cargo, and they said it was some type of advanced weapon system, including GPS, to be retrofitted up onto missiles and rockets that are currently in Hezbollah's stockpile. And so this is really interesting and important to cover and to watch, because at the moment, Iran is revolutionizing its ballistic missile technology and also its more conventional rocket technology and fitting them with this precision-guided GPS functionality that is enabling them to be extremely accurate. And so this report is not bluster. This isn't false. This is most likely true. Nasrallah himself, the leader of Hezbollah, if we go back to September 20th, he said that they have this ability now. They have precision missiles. They're able to strike wherever they want. This is what he said in a video link to his supporters on the 19th of September. He said this, quote, "I tell Israel, no matter what it did to cut weapons transport route, it is over. It has already been achieved." And then he added that Hezbollah now possesses precision missiles and non-precision weapons capabilities. And so he said that we have precision strike capabilities now on our missiles. And then Fox comes out and they say, yeah, we've tracked the plane, a 747, unloading some of these component parts to be given to Hezbollah. This was last week, and this wasn't the only one, the only journey that this specific plane has taken over the past few months. There was another landing a month earlier in Beirut as well, offloading more weaponry as well. And so this is something that's been going on for some time. It's not necessarily surprising that they're doing this. The Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the UN late in September, I think it was the 27th, this is what he had to say about Iran's facilitation of Hezbollah's increase in weapons capability.
In Lebanon, Iran is directing Hezbollah to build secret sites, to convert inaccurate projectiles into precision-guided missiles that can target deep inside Israel within an accuracy of 10 meters.
So this is substantial, a substantial change in Hezbollah's ability to hit Israel quite hard and quite accurately. And we have Israeli estimates right now is somewhere between 120 and 150,000 missiles that Hezbollah has in its arsenal right now. And then earlier this year, we had more reports about how they are able now to build their own. They don't need the actual weapons themselves to be transported over and given to them from Iran through Syria. They have the ability to do that by themselves. And now they have the added guidance systems on them, or at least GPS fittings on them, so that they can hit anywhere within 10 meters. 10 meters. That's what the Israeli Prime Minister said. And then he went on to show just how close these facilities are to retrofit these missiles with the precision strike capability, how close they are to the airport in Beirut. Have a listen.
Hezbollah, listen to this. Hezbollah is deliberately using the innocent people of Beirut as human shields. They've placed three of these missile conversion sites along Beirut's international airport. Here's a picture that's worth a thousand missiles. Here's Beirut's international airport. Here's the first missile site. It's in the Uzay neighborhood, on the water's edge, a few blocks away from the runway. Here's the second site. It's underneath a soccer stadium. That's the soccer stadium, two blocks away. And here's the third site. It's adjacent to the airport itself, right next to it.
So again, that was the Prime Minister at the end of September to the UN, and he had, in usual fashion for him, a prop there, showing the just a satellite picture of the Beirut airport, right where this 747 just landed last week or the week before last. And then it had the three different bases, weapons, munition storehouses, and where they're doing these, where they're changing over some of these missiles to have precision strike capability. Now, it was 3 or 4 days later that you had an official from the government of Lebanon that wanted to give foreign tourists a visit to that soccer stadium and the supposed warehouses. But obviously, they didn't do it the day after, so it doesn't really prove much. And he was trying to show that Mr. Netanyahu was making this up. But really, if you look at the statements from Nasrallah himself, that seems unlikely. They boasted as much themselves, Hezbollah did, that they have this ability now. Now, is this a really big change? Is this important? I think it is, and a lot of Israeli commentators are saying as much. Seth Franzman from the Jerusalem Post, he said this about this report that came out just a couple days ago. So he wrote this yesterday, and his report's entitled, "Iran Sent Advanced Technology to Improve Hezbollah's Rockets." It goes through what we've covered already, basically, about the plane arriving there and Mr. Netanyahu's speech, and just talking about how Hezbollah has this ability now. Then he writes this, "The exposure of the alleged smuggling route and allegations that GPSs are being put on the ballistic missiles poses a direct threat to Israel. In the past, Hezbollah's missiles have been relatively inaccurate." They've been inaccurate. Hezbollah's missiles, Hamas's missiles, and even Iran's missiles themselves have been quite inaccurate. And so what happens, though, if Hezbollah's missile stockpile now gets fitted with these, with the GPS that can help it hit a target within 10 meters. Within 10 meters. It's interesting just to think about this in terms of statistics of the Iron Dome system. Obviously, Israel has the Iron Dome system to knock out projectiles or rockets, or missiles that are normally have a range of about 4 kilometers up to 70 kilometers. I heard that this year they're trying to extend that to about 170 kilometers. so that they can hit them from further away. And that would be the main missile system that is targeting, or definitely is the main one that targets the rockets and such mortars that come out of the Gaza Strip, as we saw even last week, attacks from the Gaza Strip. And then you have David Sling and the Arrow system as well. But what's interesting about that, if we go back to just look at how effective that system is, it is quite effective. Back in 2014, the Pillar of Defense, that war, the 50-day war, sorry, Operation Protective Edge it was, not Pillar of Defense, that was years earlier. The that 50-day conflict, there was 4,500 rockets and mortars that were fired at Israel. The Iron Dome determines in a stunning fashion almost immediately whether these rockets are headed, or these mortars are headed, for a population center. And so it would make the decision based on how threatening they are, whether the Iron Dome is going to be launched, because I think it costs about $60,000 or $70,000 every single time it's one of these is fired. And so it's pretty expensive. And so they determine whether it's going to be a threat to people or not. If it's not, they let it go. And so they only targeted 25% of the rockets in that war, because all the rockets in that war, they weren't precision guided. They didn't have GPS. Go into the second level in on war in 2006, same thing. They're just firing, they're pointing in direction and firing for the most part. Obviously, they had some ability, but nowhere near to the ability that they're getting right now. And so you can think, well, we are so protected with the Iron Dome, but the Iron Dome only chose to hit 25% of them. What happens if instead of only 700, well, I guess they deemed about 1,000 of them being threatening, and then the Iron Dome was 85% accurate with those. Let's just say 1,000 of those rockets were deemed from the Operation Protective Edge. They were deemed threatening, and so Israel tried to shut them down. What happens then if each one of those 5,000 rockets, or 4,500 rockets that was fired, what happens if they were precision guided? What if they were going, if they had a target and they were going to try and lock onto that target within 5 to 10 meters? Well, then that Iron Dome is going to be going off all the time, right? It's going to be going off extremely consistently, trying to shut down every single one of these rockets or missiles. Now you just multiply that by 10 times. And we think Operation Protective Edge curbed Hamas's missile and rocket stores by about 30%. I think they used about 30% of them, or 3,000 of them. They had about 9,000 at the time. That's probably grown right now. But Hezbollah has 10 times that amount of missiles. And now they are being fitted with precision strike capabilities. Now, this is a dangerous change. It's not just flinging a rocket into another country and hopefully it hits something, point in the direction, let it go, and hopefully it hits something in a population center. No, they're going to have the ability to hit where they want for a lot of these missiles. That's a really big change. And if you were wondering whether this is just Iranian bluster or Hezbollah bluster, if they're making it up, if they don't have this ability now, then you just have to look at what they've done over the past couple of months. The Iranians themselves, the IRGC, have launched two major missile attacks into foreign countries. One went into eastern Syria to target some Islamic State affiliates, and the other one hit northern Iraq on September 9th. I want to talk about this briefly because it shows you just how accurate Iran is now with its missiles. They have not been accurate before. Now they are accurate, and they're giving that capability to Hezbollah. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to give it to Hamas as well, which would dramatically change the game completely. The war, sorry. Dramatically change the war. On September 9th, Iran fired 7 Fatah 110 ballistic missiles into northern Iraq to attack some Kurdish dissidents there. One of these missiles struck the building where many Kurdish leaders were meeting, 17 people were killed. Many others were injured. The Iranians were so confident that they were going to hit their target that was 180 kilometers away that they invited the press in. They invited the press to a couple days earlier. They told them, this is what we're going to do. Bring your video cameras. And then they set up and they did it. And it was accurate. Again, this is something that's a little bit different than what we've seen from Iran. Yes, they've always wanted this ability. They've always been threatening. And they've always had the ability to fire missiles, to fire rockets through them by themselves or their proxies. And now they have the ability to make them precise. That's definitely worrying for sure. Just this past week, alongside this, there was the semi-official Iranian Fars news agency. They quoted Amrali Hajizadeh. He's the head of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard's airspace division. And he said this, and he made this announcement, quote, "We have managed to make land-to-sea ballistic, not cruise missiles, that can hit any vessel or ship from 700 kilometers away." That's quite a distance. And he said, he added to that, that these were, again, they were fitted with the precision strike capability. Any ship from 700 kilometers away, now that's a long distance, and well, you know, I don't know if that's been tested just yet. Nevertheless, given the fact that they are opening up their a live test of this weaponry to their press, they're pretty confident that they can do it. They're pretty confident in their abilities now. And so what happens? What happens when Hezbollah has this ability? And what happens if Hamas has this ability? What happens if the Shiite militias that are in the tens of thousands of them right now that are in Syria stay in Syria for a while longer and they receive this type of weaponry? Of course, Israel has been trying to stop this. That's why they've shot at over 200 targets in Syria in the past year and 8 months, or year and 10 months. And they've let go 800 mortars or missiles against these targets in Syria, basically because of this. Israel does not allow tries not to allow this type of weaponry to get into the hands of Hezbollah or even any other Shiite-backed group in Syria, and certainly not for Hamas to have this ability. And so they've tried to strike it. They've tried to take out weapons convoys, munitions depots in Syria. They actually struck the Damascus airport, right where this 747 plane was a couple months ago, when it was there, or when it just left, something like that. And so, I mean, Israel's aware of this. And it makes me think, especially in relation to the way that Israel has been pushed since March, since the start of this, pushed by Hamas with this March of Return, so-called, at the Gaza border every Friday, people there with grenades trying to break through the fence, charging the fence, trying to get in there, get into Israel somehow to murder Israelis. And then you had the mortar attacks and rocket attacks last month. And then you had on I think it was last Wednesday, you had the two Grad rockets that were one fired at Beersheba that almost totally obliterated a house and that would have killed four people had not the mother woken up and dragged her three kids out of bed and went into the safety room, the bomb shelter. That weapon, I don't know if it was, I doubt it was the precision, you know, guided weapon, or else they'd probably pick a different target. But nevertheless, it hit a house, hit a residential area, but it was big. You look at the devastation from that attack. I don't remember a Grad rocket causing that much damage. That's a big payload that was on that. And the other one, land went out to sea. They tried to fire it northwards. Well, they did fire it northwards. Went out and it exploded, I guess, somewhere, or landed in the ocean at Bat Yam. Off the coast there. I wonder if what happens if they get precision strike abilities. What happens? Well, I'm talking about how Hamas has really threatened Israel and for the past 7 months, and even with these attacks last week. And what's Israel really done? Not much. Not much right now. Why hasn't Israel responded? Why hasn't Israel hit Hamas hard, as the defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, has been calling for just a devastating strike that'll set Hamas back 5 years. Maybe Israel is a little concerned about the new ability that the Iranian proxies have in the north and in the east. Maybe it can't afford right now to deploy all of the Iron Dome systems to the south of Israel, because of what they're worried Hezbollah already has in the north. Maybe they're trying to figure out a way to counter that before they incur wrath on Hamas, because it's not looking as they're probably not as confident as they once were because of the ability that Iran now has to use its proxies with these precision-guided missiles and rockets. This is definitely something to consider. Now, it is interesting. I was listening to a conference call with a former reserve major general, one of the big decision makers, Gyor Eland, I think it was his name, this past week. And he talked about, his solution for Gaza. And he was saying that, well, we could beat him over the head for a little bit. We could, take Hamas out, but that might replace Hamas with Palestinian Islamic Jihad, somebody that's worse, also sponsored by Iran. So I don't know if that's a good idea. He had this idea of basically accepting that Gaza's a state, giving them foreign aid, letting them build whatever they're going to build to try and restore civilized life in the Gaza Strip. That was his idea. And then he said something really interesting. He said that no government bases their policy on ideology. He said, well, Hamas now, they have to look after the people. The people are so upset. There's 2 million Palestinians. Not every one of those loves Hamas. And true, they don't. So then he believes that we have a rational actor in Hamas. Once they recognize that they're accountable to the people, they won't be governed by their ideology. And it was just really strange for me to hear that. After everything and every bit of evidence we've seen from Iranian-backed groups, including the Iranians, that was the whole basis for the nuclear deal. Iran doesn't really want to destroy Israel. Iran doesn't really want to wipe Israel off the map. Iran doesn't really want to get nuclear weapons and then use them. They don't. And so let's just come up with some nuclear agreement, pay them lots of money. They're going to be accountable to their people. We give them all this money. They're going to be accountable to their people to build up the state, to use those funds to improve the infrastructure, the failing infrastructure in Iran. That's how they'll use the money. And they didn't use the money that way. They increased their military budget by 30%. IRGC's budget increased by something like that. And then that funded the increased Iranian push in Syria. The money that was given to the Iranian regime, to the nuclear deal. And then I had to listen to an Israeli retired general say basically the same thing with Hamas. Let's just give them the money. Give them the money, they'll be accountable to the people. Make sure they build these structures. He talked about, obviously, he's not going to just give them loads of money. There would be some type of contract where they had to use the money for constructing power plants and such. Well, good luck policing that inside the Gaza Strip if you give them the money. At the same time that all this is going on, there was this important article that was just really refreshing to read, not because it painted a good picture, but because it was just accurate. And this was written in the Jerusalem Post this past week, and it's by Bob Pfefferman, and it was entitled Understanding Iran's Strategy for Threatening Israel. He said this, I'll just quote the first couple of paragraphs here. Over the past 18 months, we've seen growing tension on Israel's northern border. According to recent reports, the Israeli Air Force has conducted more than 200 airstrikes in Syria during this period. Although the Western media has largely ignored these developments, there are serious implications for this dangerous situation. That's why it's important to connect the dots and look at these events in the context of Iran's long-term strategy to threaten the survival of Israel. Yes, that's what we've been saying all along. You have to look at the entire strategy of Iran. Iran is backing these groups, even though Hezbollah was under sanction or Iran was under sanctions, it still managed to pump $800 million a year into funding Hezbollah under U.S. sanctions. You think they're committed to Hezbollah? You think Hezbollah is answering to Iran? You think they're part of one and the same strategy? Of course they are. And that's what this man's saying here in Jerusalem Post. He says this: many Western analysts highly underestimate the existential nature of the repeated threats by Iranian leaders to the destruction of Israel. One popular American Sunday morning talk show host dismissed the threats as empty rhetoric, saying they really don't do much about it. They say things. Yes, they paint death to Israel, death to America on all their missiles. And on that missile, the Fatah 110 that hit those Kurdish dissidents in northern Iraq, yeah, it killed them. But what was written on that missile? Death to Israel. And many would just say, well, they don't really believe that. They're not really wanting to do that. That's not what Bob Pfefferman says. He says, even if we set aside the discussion over Iran's nuclear ambitions, it should be clear to all that for more than two decades, Iran has dedicated tremendous resources to supporting terrorist proxies who share their nefarious goals. That's what they've done. That's the proof. Why, yes, Iran is struggling financially and has struggled financially. If they're not committed to their goal of destroying Israel, then what are they doing using all that important money to fund Hezbollah? Why are they doing that? If it's not really that important to them, if it's not really that important to them to counter Israel, come up against Israel and really try to wipe Israel off the map, then why right now, after the Assad regime is largely secured in power inside Syria, why not, you know, stop paying your mercenaries from Pakistan, from Afghanistan, those from Iraq that are there in Syria? Why not say, we're done paying you, let's go home, we're done, Assad's there, we're good, we've got our ally? No, because the whole point of that, or one of the major benefits for Iran, was to come in there with all of this help, these ground forces that answer to them, not even the Assad regime, support the Assad regime and then stay there, make sure the Assad regime stays compliant. They were worried about that. They still are, I bet. And then, to then get closer to Israel's border and use those forces against Israel. Now, really, this article here, understanding Iran's strategy for threatening Israel, is great because it shows that Iran's threats, they're not hypothetical. They're very real, as he says now, at the very conclusion. He says, they are very real, and they are developing now. To secure the future of Israel and peace in the region, we must raise awareness of Iran's dangerous strategy to threaten the survival of Israel. That's great to read in this piece. Because you have these false prophets out there, as has happened throughout Israel's history, preaching peace, preaching that it's going to work out, preaching that, you know, we just have to wait it out, we'll be fine. And he's saying, well, hey, this is really serious. Maybe the Iranians really do want to destroy Israel. Maybe they really do want to take Al-Quds. Maybe that's why they named their expeditionary force, led by Qassam Soleimani, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, Jerusalem Force. What is Iran doing, naming their force that they send across the Middle East, the Jerusalem Force, Jerusalem Brigade? Well, maybe they want to really take Jerusalem. Maybe they do. Well, I'm telling you, they do. They do. And the proof is in their support for these proxy groups and the fact that they are right now giving them the ability to strike Israel precisely where they want to. And so this is a substantial change. It's something that we really need to be aware of. I mean, we have been saying that it is Iran's strategy to destroy Israel, control Jerusalem, get back, and it wants to control Jerusalem. Of course, it has even greater goals than that, for sure. Once you get, the Bible reveals that Iran has so many greater goals than that. We base our understanding of Iran's goals and Iran's desires of what the Bible says about them. And it matches up quite well with what Bob Pfefferman here wrote in the Jerusalem Post. We've been saying that Iran really does want to conquer Jerusalem. We've been saying that Iran is going to try. They're going to try and mobilize the Palestinians to do just that. We've talked about how Iran has a strategy to threaten international maritime shipping through the Persian Gulf, through the Bab el-Mandeb at the bottom of the Red Sea, through the whole Red Sea and the southern Mediterranean. And that's what you have them talking about when the Iranian government has these statements about, hey, now we can hit any ship from 700 kilometers. Why are they focusing on the shipping? Because that's part of their strategy. They've said it, and we've said it for 2 decades now. And we base, as I said, that the knowledge of Iran's strategy off what the Bible says. There's some really critical scriptures in the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40 specifically starts off talking about the end time, the latter days, as it says there. And it talks about a king of the south with a very pushy foreign policy that pushes other world powers. It doesn't lay back. It says what it wants to do, and it goes and does it. It is an ideological power. It does base policy on ideology. Western academics can't understand that you actually have a radical regime that is willing to put their own people's survival at risk for the furtherance of their goals. And Iran is that power. They have said as much. Why don't we believe them? If you don't believe them, well, why don't you believe the Bible and what the Bible says, how they're going to act and what their policy is going to be? Now, if you want to read up on Iran's policy as based in scripture of just an ancient account of how they're going to act, and then what we've written about that, you can request our booklet. It's entitled The King of the South, written by our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, and it goes through Iran's strategy for the Middle East and Iran's strategy for North Africa as well, and how it fits in with biblical prophecy. It's about 100 pages, 90 or 100 pages, details the history of the Iranian empire, really, and how it's been growing. It talks about how we said that Iraq was going to fall to Iran. We said that decades ago, and that has happened. It has happened. We also show in that booklet how Iran is actually going to lose out in Lebanon and Syria in the end. Again, that's based on Bible prophecy, and you can understand those prophecies by reading that book, The King of the South. That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to send us some feedback, please do so by writing your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il.